Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the KONE Care 2.0 implementation conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Becky Ross. Ma'am, please go ahead.
Thank you, Michelle. Good morning, everyone, and happy Valentine's Day. Thank you for joining us on the weekly call today. Just a reminder that we have these calls every Thursday at 9:00, and the recordings and transcripts can be found on the website. We did cancel the call last Thursday because the state offices were closed in Topeka due to inclement weather. Also want to remind you all that open enrollment continues through April 3rd, so individuals can continue to make choices about MCOs during that period. During the call today, one or more of the MCOs may offer their customer service number for folks who have questions or need help. Just a reminder, you can find those numbers on their websites. They're also on the KONE Care website. With that, I'll turn it over to United for our first update.
Hi, good morning. This is Carrie Times with UnitedHealthcare, and really it's going to be a pretty short and sweet update. Things are trucking along as we would expect. No major implementation issues. All of our transition files are flowing through as we would expect. And, you know, we continue to offer support to members and providers through our provider call center or obviously through this vehicle of communication. But other than that, we are doing well and have no issues to report.
Thanks, Carrie. Now we'll turn it over to Sunflower.
Hi, this is Doug Kleiss with Sunflower. Similar to Carrie, we have nothing new to report today. We had put some bulletins out in the previous weeks related to anything related to the waiver and authorization, so that's moving along. We're there to support if someone is having issues. I encourage them to reach out to Alana or Emily, their provider rep for the HCBS side, and they'll be able to assist you. But beyond that, everything seems to be going okay.
I'll turn it over to Aetna.
Hello, this is Keith Wisdom. We brought this issue up a couple of weeks ago and just explain it further and confirm a load of additional auth. So EV authorizations, Aetna discovered that the Amerigroup authorization file was missing authorizations. The largest impact was on FMS providers. Those authorizations have been loaded. We also, and I believe it impacted all MCOs. In addition, there were some duplicate authorizations that we're further investigating as to whether there's any need for those to impact. And so that investigation is going on with Amerigroup and KDHE, and we'll update you if there's any additional authorizations loaded from that. Of course, you can still work with your case managers on those clients where there's an issue finding authorizations for services that require EVP. I would have provided this update last week, but our provider secure portal, some providers could not see their remittance advices. It was fixed on February 6th and validated that that's working. So if anybody had experienced that in the past, they should be able to see that working now. Credentialing status, we do get inquiries about credentialing status, and just a reminder, you can call our provider services line at 1-855-221-5656. Like Becky said, that's available on the KONE Care website, but I'll repeat it again. Our provider services line, which actually is a member services line as well, and you can use the prompts, 1-855-221-5656. 221-5656. That's for Aetna. And then one update related to claims. We identified on critical access hospitals there was a slight underpayment on inpatient claims that had been processed. There's no action needed by the hospitals. We are working to correct the payment methodology, and then we'll reprocess all impacted claims. And those are the updates expected.
Thanks, Keith. Michelle, I think we're ready to open up the line for questions.
If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Participants who ask for questions, please state your first and last name. Your line is open.
Stacey Barrett. I'm with Lincoln Center OBGYN, and this question is for Aetna. Keith, we have access now to the prior authorization online where we can check CPT codes, which is appreciated. That is a nice tool. But three codes that we found that require prior authorization I just want to touch on. It's CPT code 58671, 58670, and 58611. Those are CPT codes for tubal ligations. We have never had to prior authorize those with any other insurance, and I don't know how in the world we're supposed to do that when a prior authorization takes anywhere from 2 days to 2 weeks is what we were told. I have no idea when these ladies are going to deliver. How exactly are we supposed to handle that?
Hi, this is Dr. Esslinger. I'll speak to that. I'm with Aetna. And as you know, there's a requirement for patient consent. Our initial thought was that would be the way that we would be able to comply with the requirement for that patient consent. However, we realized there is another way that I believe the other MCOs are doing, and that is for the provider to submit with the claim the patient consent form. So we are going to move towards that solution. It is not in place today, but we hope to have that in place soon.
So these three codes will not require prior authorization at some point, but what are we doing in the meantime?
In the meantime, yes, the prior authorization is in place, but we have no intention of denying a tubal ligation as done for sterilization purposes. It's simply the means by which we will, currently indicate or be able to demonstrate that a signed consent is in place. If we find that there's some that you did not get paid for, we will correct that as soon as possible until we have the new process in place, which would be submitting the consent form with the claim.
Okay. Thank you.
Once again, participants who ask for questions, please state your first and last name. Your line is open.
In 2 to 3 days, and we still have not received any updates, and we've...
Excuse me, I think you were on mute when you were talking, or you're cutting out. Could you start again, tell us your name, who you're with, and start your question again?
Please ask your question. Participants are asked. Who pressed star 1?
This is Carrie Eisenzimmer from Physician Practice Management. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. On the well checks and that the EP well checks in that. Back in November, the reimbursement went down to 26, and as of February 1st, the reimbursement rate went back up to 70, and it retroed back to November 1st, and that. So my question is for the MCOs, do we need to do reconsiderations for those claims that were paid at that rate, at the $26, or will there be projects done by the MCOs to correct those payments?
This is Doug Kleister, Sunflower. We are pulling any of those claims that deny it, and we'll be doing a project so that providers will not have to send a reconsideration on those, so we will handle those.
Okay.
I'll see if we can get an ETA as when that project will start, but I believe it was just pulled here this week, so normally our adjustments are 30 to 45 days. They'll try to get it done quickly, but most likely at least 30 days out before you receive those payments, those adjustments on that from Sunflower.
And that's similar for United. Providers, we're in the process of getting that retroactive rate change fully loaded in the system, and once we've done that, we'll identify claims retro back to 11-1 and reprocess the claims to pay the higher rate, and similar time frame. It's usually 30 to 45 days to get all those claims identified and adjusted.
And this is Doug Kleister, Sunflower. One last thing, you know, I would just kind of recommend after maybe 60 days, you know, after the adjustments go through and you get them and you feel you still have some, maybe we missed one in the poll, reach out to your provider relations rep and notify them, and we can get those additional ones adjusted if by chance one got missed in the poll. So we want to make sure we get those all addressed and make sure that you don't have to go through the reconsideration process.
Okay.
And then that would also, just one other thing, that will also be tracked on the CanCare claims resolution log. Anytime there's a retroactive policy change, that's on that weekly file that goes out as a KMAT bulletin, and each NCO updates and reports when you would expect those claims to be adjusted. So that's also a kind of a self-service way to watch those flow through the process.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this is Kim Glenn with Aetna, and we will be following the same process. Once the system update is complete, we'll run the report to get the claims reprocessed. And again, if we would miss a claim in those projects, please just call back to member or to provider services, and they will give them the claim information, and they'll get that claim reprocessed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Patty Housett. Please ask your question.
Hello, are you on mute?
Oh. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you state your name?
Patty Holseth with Rosewood Services in Great Bend.
Okay.
I have a question regarding the authorizations. As I'm pulling them offline and printing them off to verify that everybody has their authorization for services that we provide, nowhere on the authorization does it give me the current tier rate. Is that something that you guys are going to be looking into to possibly put on the authorization so we can verify that they are correct prior to doing billing?
Is that care? Unless
I'm missing it, I guess. I mean, I'm looking at one right now, and I don't see anywhere on there where it says the current tier rate for this person.
Okay, so you're talking about the HCBS authorizations in
yes.
CBV.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Candace, are you with us?
I am with you. Hello, this is Candace with First Data. Now, are you speaking about day and res rates?
Yes.
On the IDD waiver? Okay,
yes.
We do not have day and res in Authenticare. So those are authorizations apparently that you receive from
right.
The MCO, right?
Right. Has nothing to do, and it has nothing to do with First Data.
Right.
I mean, because you guys are just doing our supportive home care.
So you're asking, will the MCOs put the tier rate on the authorization for day or residential services for the IDD
yes.
waiver?
Okay. Yes.
Becky, hi, this is Doug Kleiss with Sunflower. We do put that on our, so the tier rate is there for Sunflower.
Yes. Yes, so. You do. And so does United.
Okay. So the question
for
Aetna?
Yeah. Okay. So it's for
Aetna. So, okay, I think we teased out the question, Keith.
So Kathy, if you could get us your phone number, we'll get back with you on this.
Okay. My phone number is 62. Are you ready?
Go ahead. Yeah.
620-793-5888.
620-793-5888.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
And it's just something I'm wanting to know if you guys are going to be doing or not. You know, we've had issues in the past where the tier rates are incorrect, and then we do billing, and then, you know, it's not right on somebody's end. So, anyway, I just want to know how we're going to get that on there, because we like to verify that we have the correct tier rates.
All right, we'll investigate and be in touch with you.
Awesome, thank you. And I think that's...
Once again, participants who ask for questions, please state your first and last name. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Colette Sandquist with Maury Clinic, and I have a question for Aetna. And the question is, in the month of January of 2019, we had like over $40,000 in claims, and as of the end of January, we had only received $1,000, just a hair over $1,000 in payments. Can you explain when we will be receiving more payments?
Now, we do not have individual provider level answers on claims, so we can at our fingertips, so we can follow up with you directly and investigate the status of your claims and status of potentially the checks that have been mailed. So
okay.
If you can give us your phone number, that'd be great.
Sure. It's 785-822-0202.
Can you say that again?
785-822-0202.
Colette, your last name?
Sandquist.
Thank you.
Okay, and then I also have another question. This week we received several letters from Aetna, and it gives a member's name, date of service, account number, claim number, and it says the claim listed above is being returned to our office due to the following reasons: missing or invalid provider name on claim, and in parentheses, CMS 1500 box 31, and then if you're filing a CMS 1450, whatever claim that is, it says box 1 and dental box 53. And unfortunately, it's on three of our busiest OBGYN physicians, and I don't understand why we're getting that letter. We had, I think I got six letters, and we're keying our claims into the KMAP system so they cross over to Aetna. So I don't understand why it wasn't where it was supposed to be.
We will investigate that as well and discuss that with you when we call you.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ann Cousin. Please ask your question.
Good morning. My question this morning is for Sunflower. Doug, we have had probably, I don't know, upwards of 30 issues that are still out there from from January that we cannot get resolution to. We were told that it was an internal issue with member eligibility. And as of January 31st, we were told that we would have a resolution to that within 2 to 3 days. And we've tried numerous times to reach out to our provider rep at Sunflower with no response.
Yeah. Hi, this is Doug. In relationship to that issue, it's related, it is out on the KMAP Global Issue Log. It's related to our UMV, which stands for Unified Member View. It's a system that's kind of a repository for the eligibility information. And we went live with that in October, and we discovered there are some date span issues. So the state has been made aware of that. I believe I looked at the log yesterday. It's slated to be finally completed. They've been continuing testing, validating the eligibility spans. And it's slated for, I believe it said 228 on the issue log. Now, I know Alana had been, we were just chatting this morning, and I think she has a call out to you. She tried reaching out to you yesterday. So if you have a list of those members, we also can check to see if the record has been reflected enough. So we also do have workarounds on those to address. So if we can get a list from you to Alana, we can address those.
Yeah, we've sent her numerous lists.
I will reach out to her, and I will have her follow up today, and we'll have a discussion. And I will also engage our operations team to get some attention to your issue. But it's an issue that...
Okay, great.
You want to get squared away for everyone.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tish Collinsworth. Your line is open.
Good morning. This question is back to Keith at Aetna. Could you give me a little more information on, you'd indicated that critical access hospitals had a slight underpayment on inpatient claims. Could you give me a little more information on that?
Yeah, there's an additional payment that goes to critical access hospitals for their inpatient stays, and that additional payment was not included in our payment calculation. We're in the process of correcting it, but I don't have further details from the claims team yet on
okay,
that.
So you don't know if it impacted all critical access hospitals or just certain ones?
Not 100% sure on that.
Okay.
We do know it's more than one, right? We do know that it's at least several hospitals, but do not yet know if it's every single.
Okay. Could you reach back to me once you get more information on that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Keith, are you going to be using – this is Chris Swartz from KDHE.
Yes. Are you
going to be using the resolution log to document this issue so that providers can actually self-serve by looking at this and monitoring this issue over there?
Yes, we will add it to the claims resolution law.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. That was my question.
Thanks.
Next question comes from the line of Ruth Cornwell. Please ask your question.
Good morning. This question is for Aetna. Keith, I have two questions. One around credentialing. Can you give us an idea of where you're at percentage-wise with providers being through the contracting and credentialing piece? And am I understanding correctly that I'm still hearing from some of our members, I'm with Kansas Medical Society, I'm still hearing from our members that they've never heard anything on their credentialing, and they were submitted back in November. Am I understanding correctly that the welcome letters have not gone out yet? And I thought on one of the calls, somebody I thought had said that they'd go out middle of February. Is that still the case?
Yeah, we shared in previous calls that they would be out by the end of February, and we're still on track for that. So they would not have gotten a notice yet if they're through the credentialing process. Mm-hmm. but the welcome letters will go out, welcome packets for providers will go back out by the end of the month. As I said in my opening, if there's providers have specific questions about their credentialing status, they can reach out to our provider services team at our 1-855 number.
Keith, I appreciate that. So just so that I'm clear, so those, even those that have completed the contracting credentialing process, nothing's been sent out to them, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And we think those will go out by the end of the month?
Yes.
Okay. Can you give me an idea of where we're at as far as, you know, percentage-wise? Are 70% of the people completed both steps? Or can you break it down by provider type?
Hang on one second. Let me use my calculator and I'll get you. So we have over a little over 75% of our contracted providers have been credentialed.
Okay. And then on claims, you know, I know initially you all were kind of holding the claims and watching them go through the system, which I think everyone appreciates because they'd better have the claim processed correctly as opposed to, you know, having it paid wrong and then having to do the lift on getting it corrected. Can you give me an idea on the number of claims received and paid?
We are not holding claims. We are, you know, there. What we talked about in the first couple of weeks about 100% audit of claims. Obviously, with the volumes that we're processing, that's not a long term feasible thing. So it was around a month ago that we would have stopped holding claims for 100% audit. We are doing target audits and spot audits to make sure we're still processing claims accurately. You know, there are high volumes of claims going through. We've processed just a second here over in our as of Monday, we processed over 153,000 medical claims and over 136,000 pharmacy claims.
Okay, but how many claims received?
You know, the only things so everything is being processed within the time parameters of our contract, and the only things that have any delay are providers that are in the process of being loaded. So those are isolated instances where a provider hasn't, we didn't previously have all the information to load it, and so we're trying to find a way to load it and get the claims processed.
Okay, so to follow up on Colette from Mallory Clinic's scenario, she has claims that are denying a missing or invalid provider name on claims, and some of her providers, I think, are in the system, and I'm assuming these aren't. Should providers expect to see these letters as the reason for denial for not being in the system yet?
So no. When a provider's not loaded and we haven't processed the claim, they're not getting any denial letter. A claim's considered processed if we're sending out a denial letter. So no, that's not. There shouldn't be high volumes of the letters she's talking about. But we're, you know, that's why we'll be talking to her directly to investigate what particular issue is causing that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Barb Zimmerman. Please ask your question. Your line is open.
Barb Zimmerman from Helpers, Inc. I had a couple things I needed, probably just more to bring to someone's attention. Been going through our authorizations for February now, and majority of those from all MCOs are not matching those that transitioned over from Amerigroup. So we're trying to compile a list of the discrepancies to send to each MCO, but we just need them to be aware that those will need to be corrected to the carryover amount that Amerigroup had assigned at the end of the year. And also on the ISPs that are coming over for transition members from Amerigroup, we're seeing a lot of those ISPs with the, they're starting those out on 4/1/19 instead of 1/1/2019. Should those not all be dated 1/1/19?
Barb, I can. This is Becky Ross. I can answer the second question. I think I believe they're dated 4/1 because of the transition policy that we have that essentially says things are covered for the first 90 days without authorizations or non-participating providers, et cetera. So we had instituted that transition of care policy that would sort of smooth the move from Amerigroup over to the other plans. So that's probably why you're seeing the 4/1 date.
Okay, so for 3 months on all Amerigroup consumers, we won't have a written ISP for those 3 months. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you shouldn't need one. We were not able to get the ISPs from Amerigroup. It was going to be a very difficult process and lift for them to provide all of those. So for the first 90 days, everything is essentially going to be what it was previously.
But shouldn't those be reflected on the existing MCO's ISP?
Well, I think from the United perspective, we will not issue the United specific service plan until we go out and do our assessment and then issue our service plan that will begin 4/1. So you would need to refer to the service plan that Amerigroup provided you during the transition period. And then, as I said, we will provide a service plan for those members once our assessment is completed. We create our specific service plan, and those go into effect April 1st.
Okay. All right, and then a concern for Sunflower. We have a lot of claim issues dating back to November that we've been trying to get payment on. They were issues within Sunflower's system. So if someone could please get in contact with me to let me know when we can expect payment on those claims.
Alana's on the call. Go ahead, Alana.
Oh, Barb, I was going to say I will call you right after this call's over so we can confirm which claims you're still missing.
Okay. All right, and then one last thing I just wanted to bring to Aetna's attention. We did have our provider experience rep here yesterday. She was great, provided us a lot of information, and we were able to give her a lot of information too. But probably one of our biggest concerns right now is the inability to correct a claim. They're saying to use the CMS 1500, but if we resubmit a claim in the exact same way it was submitted through Authenticare, I'm afraid it's going to continue to deny. I don't know how we're going to get our explanation to you as to why it shouldn't have denied.
Can we go ahead and get your phone number, Barb, so we can reach back out to you to look at that issue?
Sure. That's 913-322-7212.
Okay. And we will also follow up on who was our provider experience rep that was in your office yesterday?
Angela Cummings.
Okay. I will reach out to Angela and get some further information, and then we'll reach back out to see what we can do on the claim correction.
Okay, great. All right, that's
thank
it. Thank you.
You
very much.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of Tish Collingsworth.
Tish,
your line is open.
Yeah, this is Tish Hollingsworth with the Kansas Hospital Association, and I have received a couple of calls this week, and I have reached out to your staff as well. This is for Aetna, that some of our RHC providers have indicated that they have incorrect encounter rates loaded. It doesn't appear that everybody is having that issue, so I wondered, do you have more information? Is it hit and miss? Is it more systemic?
Tish, this is Kim Glenn. Excuse me, this is Kim Glenn. We are aware it looks like it may just be provider specific, not across all of the RHCs. We do have some folks taking a look at that, and then if we do know that it goes and we'll follow back up with those particular RHCs, and then for purposes if we do know that it is more widespread, it will go on the claims resolution log. So, but it looks to be just very specific for a handful of RHCs.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. Participants who press star 1, please state your first and last name. Your line is open.
Okay, maybe it's me. I gave my name at the beginning, but maybe it didn't get captured. This is Jackie Clifton with Advocate Care. And I have a question for Aetna on processing their claims through Authentic Care. If we are seeing denials and you want us to submit CMS 1500 to correct claims, and it looks like the denial is related to a DPL issue, I had asked Jason Osterhaus with KDHE in an email a few weeks ago with some of my questions. I haven't heard back from him on this, but the state has a TPL blanket denial list that covers probably almost all HCBS codes, and that has made billing to the MCOs for Authentic Care a much easier process where we don't have to go out, get a denial from the third-party insurance and, you know, keep it or send it to you guys. I just wonder, with Aetna, are you aware of this blanket denial? Do you have it set in your system? And if not, can you look into that, get it set up so we don't have to try and submit the CMS 1500 claims to you when these services really, you know, are not ever going to be covered by third-party insurance, and they should basically auto-pay because you all have created the authorization for these services.
Okay. Hi, Jackie. This is Chris.
Yes.
I will get with Jason and see, you know, what he has initiated with Aetna to work on that and inform them of the list we have. It's basically kind of an exemption from TPL. For
yes.
A list of codes, so we will get that resolved for you.
Okay, I think I think it's a big issue that maybe might have been overlooked. I'm not, you know, 100% sure, but what I've heard talking to other providers is this TPL denial that we shouldn't be seeing.
Okay, so we will have Jason work with that longer to make sure that, you know, they understand the policy and how those need to be loaded. And then we will have them communicate back to you so you know where we are with the issue.
Okay.
Okay?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie, could you give us your phone number as well? Jackie, are you on mute? If you could send us your phone number. Well, Chris, we'll work with Jason. Lisa has her.
We have a phone number from prior calls. So I can give it to you if you want it. 316.
I think we're looking it up now.
Okay.
But thanks.
All right. Yeah, it was from previous call. She's in there. But if you don't, if you can't find it, I have it.
Your next question comes from the line of Carrie. Please ask your question.
This is Pam. I'm with Carrie here. But on the new Aetna cards that are coming out, they're coming out with providers that have left the practice that maybe even a year ago. So I just wanted your thoughts on that.
So can you give us your practice name and phone number, and we'll be reaching out with you to get our rosters updated in our system.
Okay. My name is Pam, and my phone number is 785-452-4796.
We will, that's solved by updating, you know, in our system,
sure.
The roster. So we'll
okay.
Work with you on that.
All right, thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions. Oh, we have a question again from Ann Cousin. Your line is open.
Good morning. I just had one more question. I was wondering if we could get the contact info for each of the MCOs that are on the line this morning.
Well, I'm not – this is Becky Ross. I'm not sure what you mean. As I stated at the top of the call, and they've said their numbers are listed on their websites. They're also listed on the CanCare website. So you would call the customer service number – follow the prompts for your particular issue.
Okay. All right. I was just wondering if we could have contact info for each of you.
Well, there's a whole lot of people on the call from each MCO.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
We have a follow-up question from Tish Collinsworth.
Tish, with
your line is open again.
This is Tish with the Kansas Hospital Association, and this question, I guess, would be for KDH&E. I think earlier you'd indicated that you would run these calls through the end of February. Do you have any idea if you'll continue them beyond that point yet?
I think, you know, given the volume of questions, that we probably will schedule them through March.
Okay.
And then, you know, assess it kind of mid-March to see where we are.
Perfect. Thank you.
We have a follow-up question again from Ruth Cornwell. Please ask your question.
Hi, thank you. My question is for Aetna. I'm curious. I understand you're going to be putting claims issues on the claims resolution log, and I know that we've talked to Aetna staff about Aetna developing a Q&A section on their website. So for those who aren't on these calls can go to the website and kind of review some of the questions. Where are we at in that? Or are there even, first of all, are there even plans? We suggested it, but I'm not seeing anything on the website yet.
Ruth, this is Kim, and we'll double check because we have posted some things out on the website. I know we're still working on a billing newsletter, working with that with KDHE. So let us, I'm going to go back through the website and we'll give you a call back.
Thank you.
There are no further questions. Presenters, please continue.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you, everyone, for participating on the call. We'll have another one next week at the same time. Have a great day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.